Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome, you're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave, that's Tim. This is Beyond the Darkness. And I want to thank everybody. I've been answering messages nonstop, birthday wishes and love and light and anniversary wishes and love and light and birthday wishes for my daughters and congratulations on my granddaughter. It's been a busy week, Tim.
Oh, I bet it has, yeah, yeah.
Births and anniversaries and birthdays and everything. So it's been a crazy week, and I just want to thank everybody for all the time you took. I'm doing my best, folks, to try to respond to as many of your messages as I can. So please just be patient with me. It may take me a week or two to get through them all, but I will try to respond to everybody that's out there. We've got a lot of great stuff going on the show coming up. We've got a lot of great guests lined up. I will say, you know, we had an interesting guest. The paranormal yields amazing guests and a couple of unhinged people, Tim. That's all I've got to say. We've had a woman that was scheduled to be with us today. And, you know, for 3 years, she's been off and on planning to be on the show and then bails out on me last minute. So this, unfortunately, was her last strike. I won't give names. But why do you even bring it up then, Dave? Because we got a guest that replaced at the last minute and was willing to jump on board. And I am so thankful for that because, it's hard. People, especially this time of year, people have so much going on in their lives and they've got a lot that they're working on. So, finding a guest that can just jump on at the last minute is not easy. And if anything, Tim, I'm glad to have him on the show simply because of the joy it brought to my entire family when they said, oh, you got a guest? I said, yes. And they said, who'd you get? And I said, I got Hercules Invictus, to which my entire family began clapping and going, Hercules, Hercules. They couldn't have been happier. They don't care what the topic is. That I'm talking to a Hercules is all that matters to them. And our guest today is Hercules Invictus. He's dedicated his earthly sojourn to studying, sharing, and applying the legacy and lessons of the celestial gods of Greek mythology who still reside on Mount Olympus. Hercules is currently involved with several social causes, teaches, conducts workshops, and hosts the Elysium Project, Pride of Olympus, and Voice of Olympus podcasts. He also writes for magazines on occasion and has published 2 e-books and has regularly contributed Olympian content to Timothy Beckley's paranormal anthologies. Hercules most recently established the Order of the Golden Fleece and has been recruiting Argonauts to help him usher in the new age of heroes. For more information, you can find him on Facebook. You can visit his website, and we've got his website and email on today's program right on the link, so you can find it there. Hercules, thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm greatly honored to be here, and I'm doubly greatly honored to be here amidst all the wonderful things that are happening to you. So, again, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's a good time to be alive, my friend. And I got to tell you, our buddy, Tim Beckley, who is an astounding guest and has always been so entertaining, when I reached out to him yesterday and I said, hey, bud, you know, we had a guest drop out on us last minute. Do you have anybody in mind? He said, I think I got a guy you're going to like. This guy, he's going to talk to you about stuff you don't normally cover and or that you cover, but in a totally different way. And with that, I'm always intrigued. I love when we can bring a guest on that has a different perspective. What he sent me said, true to his adopted name, Hercules is a follower of the ancient aliens theory and believes that the Greek gods of Olympus are still present here, concealing themselves behind masks more suited to our modern times. They reside in underground threshold and from time to time venture out in their fiery chariots known as UFOs and even interact with the locals. He has had many paranormal experiences, starting at an early age, perceiving spirits, both human and non-human. Besides being a pod show host, he has contributed sections to such books as UFO Hostility, Alien Bloodlust, Hidden Treasures of the Knights Templars, and Weird Winged Wonders, Ashtar's Space Brothers Speak, and the forthcoming Area 51 Warning Keep Out. That all of those books that I just mentioned, folks, are on our site. If you go to darknessradio.com, click on the store tab, scroll down, you'll find our Amazon page link. Click on it. You'll see the books separated by paranormal or true crime books. And below that is other paranormal merchandise and gift items. So you can click in there, find all of the books that we mention on the show and purchase them. So it makes it easier to locate all of the stuff. So Hercules, reading that, I was intrigued immediately. I mean, we hear many different aspects of alien content, but the gods of Olympus, talk to me about this concept. This is relatively new to me that it's being tied to the quote unquote gods of old.
Yes, the gods of Olympus are different from our current concept of what gods are or should be. They were beings who could shapeshift. They were beings who lived high on mountains, and they were beings that were very much a part of the human condition around them. And they still are. They haven't really gone anywhere. And if you quest to find evidence of them, it's there very sufficiently, whether you're looking in accounts of individuals, folklore accounts, in magical texts from the Dark Ages. There's a thread that continues through all of these. And now a lot of the ancient spiritualities are popping up again and people are discovering them anew. They're very much part of our popular culture. They're in movies. They're in video games. They're on office and government buildings. So, you know, pretty much the gods of Olympus are very much a part of the human experience. And unlike a lot of the ancient astronaut theory, there doesn't seem to be a laboratory where genetic experiments are taking place. It seems that there's natural selective breeding going on. So their essence is one with that of humanity. And this is a common concept in religions. In Judaism, you have the chosen people, and their story is chronicled in the Bible. So it's the same thing with the Greeks and their gods. So basically,
Could I ask you, Hercules?
Sure.
Let me ask you something real quickly here. So then these gods, was that a title that we bestowed upon them? Because as humanity, we want something to feel superior, to have an overranking feel to them? Or was this something that they kind of manifested and related to us as being gods?
That's a very good question, and you can answer it in a number of ways. In the most ancient literature, they're known as Yathanathi, which just means the deathless, or the immortals, it's sometimes translated. And in character, they're very much like us, except more so.
Okay.
So they behave as humans would behave, but on a National Enquirer or Weekly World News status. You know, they were exalted beings in the sense that they were all out there. There was excess in everything. And even though Apollo at the Oracle at Delphi said nothing in excess, the gods were all about excess.
And so let me ask you this then. I don't mean to keep taking you off the track, but I'm just curious.
That's okay.
Does this mean then that, you know, like Australia, right? You know, a lot of jokes are made about it, but basically Australia was a prison colony. It was a penal colony.
Yes.
They sent all of their dirty, unwashed criminals over to Australia to kind of, well, here, if you want to be like this, this is where you go. Is planet Earth kind of a prison colony for these ancient aliens? Were they stuck here because they weren't welcome where they were from? Or did they choose our planet in order to be a part of it because of the populace and what was already taking place here?
That's a very good question. And again, it depends on who you talk to. You could view Earth as a prison. You could view Earth as a rehabilitation facility, or you could view Earth as a school, depending on how positively you want to look at our experience here. And there does seem to be a process of learning involved here, if we are open to that possibility. And many spiritualities, and especially modern ones, which are more open with it, but it has its roots in the mystery schools of old, have described an initiatic process that as you gain greater life mastery, you progress and you're more capable of doing things. You're more capable of taking your imagination and using it to create reality. And our creativity is our most divine gift, and it ties us directly to the gods. And you can ascend and become a god yourself or a godlike being. So you can choose to see your time here as something unpleasant where you're stuck, or you could see it as a series of challenges that you had a hand in choosing for yourself that will help you learn and move past that particular set of patterns that are keeping you back.
So do you believe then that these gods are ancient beings of another realm, or are they what our potential is, but we lost our way?
Both. There's a lot of literature in antiquity, and the gods themselves tend to express themselves in mytho-astrological terms. They're associated with the planets. Our planets are named after them. The days of the week, although in English it's the Anglo-Saxon or northern equivalent of the gods, it's the same gods that are there in our days and our week, and that too ties to the planets in our solar system, the five classical planets, and then the luminaries, the sun and the moon. So this information is encoded in a lot of our calendar and in how we structure our reality, and our constellations too. A great deal of them are from the Greek myths. And the ancients, especially Ptolemy, who devised the system of spheres, the heavenly spheres, they did not understand that outer space was past the atmosphere. The atmosphere to them was the vault of heaven or the bowl of sky, and then the planets circulated underneath there in concentric circles. So they believed that past the vault of heaven was the Empyrean, where it was a totally different reality. And you can actually, looking at ancient texts, you could see how they thought the planets lined up by how they structured what comes first, what comes second, what comes third. And in modern New Age teachings based on this ancient wisdom, they've adjusted to our current beliefs on what the planets, how the planets line up with the sun and moon and so forth. So there is information, and enough people have discovered that even if the information is not available to you through books or through archaic orders that you can join, certain states of mind that you access will give you the same information. So that information is there for us to tap into and utilize in our experience here. And it helps if you look at it like a school. I believe they came from someplace else. The accounts say that they came from someplace else beyond our Earth. But that they stayed here, they helped create us, and they're still there helping to guide us and inspire us.
Well, there's reference to the Nephilim and the Anunnaki. Yes. Are these just interchangeable titles for these Olympian gods or Olympus gods? Are they fallen beings that have been here mating with humanity? Is there truth to that aspect of it as far as you're concerned?
As far as I'm concerned, yes, there are way too many accounts, and that type of thing still happens in the UFO literature. So this seems to be something that's been happening since the dawn of time, because it's described in very ancient writings, it's represented in very ancient art, and again, it's still very much a part of the UFO phenomenon.
When did this become something that you became aware of? And do you feel that you, I mean, obviously in adopting the name Hercules, do you feel that you have a direct descendant tie to this original race?
Yes, most certainly so. I'm a Lemnian Greek. Lemnos is an island in the Aegean Sea, which is north of the Mediterranean. And it's, I don't know if you saw Jason and the Argonauts, the Harryhausen one.
Right, sure.
Remember where they landed on the Isle of Amazon women?
Right.
That's Lemnos. So it's part of the Argonaut cycle. And the Argonauts stayed there for a couple of years. They took a break from their quest until Hercules chased them all on board, and they continued with the quest for the Golden Fleece. So there's a lot of mythology on these islands. The Amazons were there, the Argonauts were there, Hercules was there. So from very early age, I had a connection to those stories and our descent from those heroes. So that was in terms of my family and my culture. And I happened to be born in 1959 here. And that was when all the Italian Peplum movies, also called Sword and Sandal or Hercules movies, were right. all over the place. So I was nurtured on those as well. And there was a cartoon, The Mighty Hercules, too, where he had a belt and a sure. ring. And yeah, so I grew up in that, too. And that reinforced the mythology of my culture. So I had that association from the beginning. My name, my birth name, translates into Hercules. It was Panayotis, which imagine going through life with that name here in this culture. I got stuck with so many names that people gave me that at some point it's like, enough, I'll translate it myself. So Panayotis means dedicated to the Queen of Heaven. That's in the new religion, who's Panagia. So Hercules or Heracles means dedicated to the Queen of Heaven, who in antiquity was Hera. So other people with that name had translated it to Hercules, and since I already had that connection and association with Hercules, I went with that as well.
Very cool.
Well, so that's my personal connection with it, and because of these connections, I spent a lot of time reading about it, studying it, and so forth, and it became my favorite thing to do. So living mythology became what my life is all about, and I'm really happy with that. And it's led me on some very interesting adventures, some speculative and some investigative. And here I am talking to you. So the journey's been a great one.
Right. Now, for people that are interested in the concept of these ancient gods, do you believe that there is room not only for the gods of Olympus, but the gods of Asgard? Are these different races of aliens, or are they all the same race, just different interpretations? Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes a lot of sense. And I have spent years exploring other pantheons as well. I spent over 15 years exploring the Norse mythos. And this led to some very interesting areas, because you'll experience them as these beings. They can appear as they wish to appear. So they will take on the guise of whatever you are pursuing, mm-hmm. so that you can communicate and understand. So if you're into Norse, the Norse mythos and Asgard and Vanaheim and the Nine Worlds and all of that, your experiences will be very Norse. It's like when have you ever worked with dream interpretation?
Personally, no, but yes, we've had many people come on to do dream interpretation over the years on our show.
Well, if you're studying dream interpretation through a Jungian lens, your dreams will be very Jungian. If you're studying it through a Freudian lens, your dreams will be very Freudian. If you study it through an Adlerian lens, an Edgar Cayce lens, a Kankar lens, whatever lens, you know, however you're approaching the invisible within yourself,
right,
your dreams will comply, and they will communicate to you in such a way that it makes sense to you because of the system that you're studying. And if you study another system, there'll be a transitional period, and then your dreams will communicate with you in that way. It's the same with the invisible, I'm finding. Again, this is just my opinion based on my experiences. Something could happen tomorrow that'll totally change my mind, and I'm open to that. But in my experience, these beings are very universal and transcend culture. They transcend our concept of time. So they're kind of timeless, and they have been part of our experience as humans as we evolved through here, that we've culturally clothed them. So they have a reality on that level. And they have a different reality, like on the Norse level or on the Sumerian level or so forth. But beyond that cultural mass, the beings are identical. But on another level, they're not. I don't know if it, does that make sense?
Yeah, I get the concept of that. Sure. Now, is there a way to, evoke or call them forward. Well, you said that they hide behind masks, these gods of legend and lore, and that they do make themselves known. How do we know that? What proof of that is there?
If you approach them, and again, depending on what your beliefs are in approaching them, some people like modern Hellenistic spirituality, people approach them like worshipers, in which case the communications that they get will be like in dreams or through synchronicities or through content that comes out through channeling or other forms of divination. And, you know, that will become how they communicate. And other people communicate in other ways. I found that if you're focused there, and just like with synchronicity, the more you focus on synchronistic events, the more synchronicities you're going to have, and the more you're going to be aware of them. Or if you work with dreams, lucidity. That sounds like something amazing, but if you work on dreams every day, you find that you're lucid, you know, just as often as you're not. So it's the same thing with the gods. If you focus on detecting the movement or the hand of the gods, you'll start noticing synchronicities, and then you'll start having encounters. And the encounters seem normal initially while you're having them, and then later they'll appear not to be normal. And you wonder why you didn't question while it was going on, but they'll happen here in the waking world. Would you like me to give an example of that?
Yes, please.
The first thing I wrote for Tim Beckley actually had this story in there, and it involves Lemnos, the island I'm from. Every time I went to Lemnos as a child and as a young man and as a young adult, I would wander around the mountains. You know, I love walking. So there's a shrine to Agia Marina, which means Saint Marina, up in some mountains that overlook a bay, and you can watch the sun from there, and it's facing west. And in days of old, you could see Ilium or Troy, because it was made of marble and it glistened in the sun from these same mountains. So whenever I would go to Agia Marina on my own, a woman would appear. And she was dressed in white. She appeared young. And she always seemed to know what was going on in my life. So we'd have a conversation. And she'd bring up incidents from my life, and, you know, we would talk about things generally. And then when it was time for me to leave, I would say, okay, it was great talking to you. It was good to see you again. I'll see you, you know, hopefully next time I pass. And then when I would walk, all of a sudden the oddness of it and the fact that this has happened many times before and it was odd before, but it wasn't odd when it was happening again, would strike me. So I'll turn around, and Greece is very barren. So there are olive trees hither and yon, and a lot of dryness. So there's no place this person could hide where I couldn't see them like seconds later. But they're never there when I look, and they never age, and they're wearing the same like white clothes. And how do they know what's been going on in my life and so forth? But that's been a recurring encounter that's happened throughout my entire life. And I haven't been there like in a couple of decades, but every time I did go there, this would happen to me at one or several times during the course of the summer, and I would never remember its oddness until like immediately after I left. So that's an example of that type of thing. And it's happened here in America as well with chance encounters in parks or on buses, you know, an encounter that was of high strangeness, but not until it finished. And then the things that were said or shared during that became like meaningful. And they were kind of like a wink at the old stories being true, that the gods do visit humanity and we're not aware of them. And they are very interested in how we're going to treat them. And that's how Greek hospitality came about, because you don't know who the people you're interacting with are. They could be gods. And if you don't treat them well, they will turn you into a tree or something. So,
well, that's always rude. Now,
in
kind of the concept of the gods, alien races, things like that, I mean, certainly there have been many different races of aliens that appear to people, whether they're the Nordics, which sound like the Asgardian gods, or even perhaps the Greek myth gods, or you know, are they from another place and time altogether? You've got the mantis, you've got Palladians, you've got all of these different grays and different aspects of the race. Are these the gods just taking different form and shape, or are they all truly just different races?
There appear to be different types of beings and types of races, and they get kind of mixed up together in the mythology. And you brought up Norse mythology. So in Norse mythology, you have like dwarves, you have giants, you have different types of gods. You have the Aesir and the Vanir. And then you have elves, and you have like light elves and dark elves. And you have, you know, there's a lot of different types of beings popular in the mythology. So let's look at the elves for a second. The light elves and the dark elves. We have beings of light, and then we have shadow beings in our modern encounter literature and you know, people's chronicles of experience of people who have encountered these type of beings. We have giants in UFO literature, and those giants often appear in places like Russia, which is where the Vikings used to place them on the map. And then the dwarves appear in South America and other places scattered throughout the world. And although there is some indication that the Pygmies at one point were world travelers for their ships, and that could account for part of the mythology, supernaturally in terms of folklore creatures, those are still encountered to this day in those places. So there appear to be different types of beings. But again, the gods are shapeshifters, and that's very clear in the mythology as well. So they could appear as different types of beings. So I don't know what the final answer is to that. The ancients had a class of being called the planetary spirit as well. And the planetary spirits are very similar to what's described in the Kontaki literature. And these spirits also identify with planets and constellations. So, you know, I've always felt they were the same thing. And I made an exhaustive study of the contactee literature just to try to understand that a little bit better.
Do you believe that these beings are representations of other aspects of supernatural and anomalous phenomena? You know, do we consider that Bigfoot, Chupacabra, the Mothman may just be different visages as the gods? As I understood, it could shift and change shapes. And as you brought up, that's a part of that that legend as well. Is this perhaps what we're dealing with? And the silent unseen that we consider to be ghosts are nothing more than the gods moving amongst us?
I believe partially, yes. I believe that there are some beings that could change the way they are perceived. And that those beings can appear as anything they want. But then I also believe that they're, like, we're kind of stuck in how we look in our bodies and so forth. I believe that there are other classes of entities, some of them elemental or nature spirits, and some of them the dead and so forth, that are also kind of stuck in how they can be perceived. And whether you want to look at these as beings in different stages of development or the same thing in different manifestations, I don't know, you know, what the answer would be. But there appear to be like both, a little bit of both, like the shadow beings, for instance. This is a popular talk that I give, you know, hither and yon when I talk about these things publicly, but you can find descriptions of the shadow beings in UFO literature. You can find it in descriptions of the djinn and other types of non-human intelligences. You can find it with the incubus and succubus literature. You can find it in the demonic literature. You can find it in the cryptid literature. And it's always the shadowy being, sometimes with the red glowing eyes, sometimes not. The MO and the description are the same, but the interpretation given to it is different. So like if you approached it from an Olympian standpoint, those would be satyrs. And satyrs are usually found in mountain areas. And when I'm giving a talk in mountain areas, a lot of people report seeing like these bedroom peers or dark shadows that tell you it's okay, go back to sleep. You know, sometimes they get sexual with you and so forth. So the fact that these beings exist is without a question in my mind. So many people are experiencing them and have been recording them. But then the stories we tell about them are different. So depending on which stories we've bought into or have foisted on us or, you know, find attractive, how we class a shadow will differ. But the fact that the shadows are there is a truth.
Are these beings malevolent or are they benevolent or are they completely neutral? It just depends on the day on how they react towards us.
Are bears hostile? Are bears friendly? Are bears neutral? I really think it's an individual thing. That, you know, sometimes like some dogs are like pretty aggressive. Some are like not and are very submissive. I think it's up to the individual creature. Unless they have intelligence and they have some intent that causes them to help or hinder in our evolution or in our unfolding affairs. I personally believe at this particular stage in my journey that unless there's a reason for them being aggressive or malevolent towards us, that they're either observing us or there for a particular function or just sharing this dimensional bandwidth with us. So it's kind of like on that particular level.
All right. We have to take just a second to recognize Pluto TV, one of our sponsors, folks.
Awesome.
This is an amazing place if you are looking to kind of cut the cable cords, get rid of your dishes, and you're looking for something that's affordable, family-friendly, and can give you a lot of content. Check out Pluto TV. It is the leading free streaming television service. You can watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies, all on demand, all for free. But Tim, I know what you're thinking. God, I got to go to another site and put my credit card in again?
Yeah, well, yeah.
No, you don't, actually. There's no credit card needed. I know what you're thinking, though, Tim. Like, you need to sign up for one more thing, right?
Well, yeah.
Well, no, you don't. You don't actually have to. So stop being so negative, Tim. No credit card needed, and you don't have to sign up for anything. Pluto TV is just that easy, and it's the completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all of your favorite devices today. You can download Pluto TV for free on your favorite devices like your phone, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, your Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStations. Hell, even those refrigerators, Tim. Have you seen refrigerators and washing machines now have built-in TV technology?
I have. I wish I had one. I'd never leave the refrigerator.
Well, why should you? Yeah. Now you've got Pluto TV. You can download all of these great points and have access to the best free streaming TV everywhere in your house. All right, Hercules Invictus, our guest today. And this is a fascinating topic. You know, when you first hear some of these things, I got to tell you, Hercules, Tim and I will hear some of the concepts and ideas and we'll roll our eyes and say, let's roll the dice and see what happens here. Just from reading what you were involved in and your fascination and interest in this, it really piqued my curiosity. And I love the fact that we might be able to tie in the legends and lore that have always existed. And listen, throughout Christianity, there are many different levels that kind of talk about anomalous flying craft or beings that seem to walk among us. So this isn't some kind of radical design that's these lunatics and nuts. Listen, if you're a Christian, you're just as lunatic and nut because they're talking possible UFOs, giants, and creatures in their literature, as is in the Norse mythology and the Greek mythology and all of the other mythologies that are out there. Many different courses of religions and theologies across the world subscribe to the fact that we are not alone and that we have been visited from elders or beings from other places, some that have taken up residence right here on Earth. So this is, it seems like the natural position. And if anything, that's the one thing that should bind us all together as opposed to pushing us apart.
I totally agree with you. And many of our Argonaut initiatives have been interfaith. where we've created forums where people can discuss their different beliefs about why we're here and what this is all about, and not judge how somebody else views the universe, but try to learn from it. And then at the same time, what are the needs of the humanity we all share right now? And how about we do something about that, you know, to try to make the world a better place? So I find that approach to be very effective. Unfortunately, some people are very, very, very invested in the stories that they grew up in or have chosen to believe is true. And they're not open to, you know, maybe we're all talking about the same thing. We're describing it in different ways. In antiquity, the Greeks and the Romans did this everywhere they went. If there was a strong man, god, or hero, that was Hercules. If there was like a king, that was Zeus. And you could see this happening throughout the records that have survived from antiquity. They recognized their gods and other people's gods. And one of the first things they did to communicate and form a relationship was equate gods. So this way, okay, the gods came here, just like there are different stories in different parts of Greece. Here there's different stories, you know, so let's just figure out who's who, and then we could talk better and understand each other better. And during the Hellenistic era, which is between Alexander and Cleopatra and then into a couple of the Caesars, what was happening is Alexander, through violence, unfortunately, but he kind of united a big chunk of the world. So all that had been hidden by magicians and priests and so forth, they had an opportunity to openly like explore these things together, and they found that a lot of their hidden wisdom was very, very similar. So they called this esoterico, which is esoteric or hidden. And then the myths and the stories that the people had was called exoterico, exoteric, or, you know, just basically the people's religion. And that was kind of not as pure as the esoteric, but it contained a lot of coded information, like in the numbers that were used and so forth. And that's not originally of this. Tons of literature, you know, written about this. What they did was they kind of unified and codified what they all believed and kept it on an esoteric level, and then the exoteric continued to be what it was, and through the rituals of initiation, somebody was brought into what these things really mean. And when they involved different states of mind, the initiatic experiences taught them through different practices to find these states of mind and so forth. And when the ancient world fell, and those things had to be hidden because you can get killed for espousing them, it evolved into a lot of the magical traditions. It started to reemerge with the Rosicrucians and so forth, like in the 1500s. So there, too, if you follow those threads, they're mm-hmm. there. But they're kind of obscured and muddied, but they're still there.
We're going to have to take a break. When we come back, I'd like to get into some of the different aspects of these stories that you find most fascinating and the proof that sure. we could point to for these different beings and races that still live amongst us. You know, some believe that they've left us here and we're nothing more than an experiment. Others like you seem to believe that they do still live and walk amongst us. We'll talk more about that when we return right here to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. Tim.
Yeah, yeah.
You smell good, buddy.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Is that because you're using Native?
As a matter of fact, I am.
That's right. Native, take care of your body because it's the only place you have to live. At Native, they create safe, simple, effective products that people use in the bathroom every day. They create products with trusted ingredients and trusted performance. Not convinced? Well, you can go on up and smell Tim Dennis's armpits, but if you're not close enough, you can check out the 9,000 five-star reviews from their customers. That might be a little less intrusive on Tim and a little easier for you to do at home. Check this out. All of their stuff is formulated without aluminum, parabens, or talc. It's filled with ingredients found in nature, such as coconut oil, shea butter for moisturizing and emollient, tapioca starch, which absorbs wetness, and they never, never, Tim, I can't stress this enough, they never test on animals.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Plus, there's free shipping and returns. It works. Making the switch to an aluminum-free deodorant doesn't mean having to sacrifice on product performance. Test it out and tell everybody how amazing Native is. Tim and I switched over. I got to tell you, I have very sensitive skin, folks, and I couldn't figure out what was happening, why my armpits kept breaking out. And I've tried different things and lotions and creams, and I finally broke it down to the fact, well, it's got to be the deodorants and antiperspirants I'm using. And I stopped using them, and Tim said, Dave, you got to find an alternative, buddy. Going all natural is not the way to go. So we went Native instead, because it does work. Again, they have over 9,000 five-star reviews. You can check them out. They've been on the Today Show, Elle Magazine, Pop Sugar, Refinery 29, just to name a few. And less is more with Native. Their formula contains simple ingredients that you understand, so you know everything that's in their deodorant. I switched over, Tim. My sensitive skin issues are gone. I don't have the rashes and problems that I was having underneath my armpits from using all of the big block name store deodorants that have been out there for so long. I feel kind of free, finally, and much better.
That's good to know.
Yep, it's aluminum-free, and it's safe, and it's effective. Native comes in a wide variety of enticing scents for both men and women. Plus, they release new limited additional seasonal scents throughout the year. And they offer an unscented formula and baking soda-free formula for those with sensitivities, which was a big draw for me personally. Tim, is that the cucumber and mint that I smell on you?
You have very perceptive nostrils, my friend.
Well, you know, I know my buddy Tim, and I know what he smells good in, and cucumber and mint is his mix. I've got the eucalyptus and mint myself. They also have coconut and vanilla, which is probably their most popular scent. They have lavender and rose, which is what the beautiful Winnie Schrader wears. It's no risk to try it. They offer free returns and exchanges here in the good old U.S. of A, Tim. So, this is what I like. It's sensitivity. It's that it's safe for me. I don't have to worry about all the chemicals that are in there, and it is helping the sensitivity issues I have. And if you are like me, you want to try something like this. And they don't test on animals, which is a huge thing for Tim and I. We are both animal advocates, love animals, and we love the fact that they take their business and the way that they conduct it very seriously. So this is what we've got for 20% off your first purchase. Visit nativedeodorant.com and use promo code darkness during checkout. Native deodorant, nativedeodorant.com. nativedeodorant.com, and use promo code darkness during checkout to save 20% off. You guys are going to absolutely love it. It's an amazing change. I'm glad I made. Tim's glad I made. And he's glad he made as well. So go out, try Native. It's the only alternative that everyone should be taking advantage of. We're so excited to be welcoming Hotboxing with Mike Tyson to the Podcast One family. Listen as Mike Tyson, the baddest man on the planet, pours his soul into conversations with fascinating minds, celebrities, and athletes. Along with his cosmic millennial sidekick and former NFLer, Eben Britton, Kid Dynamite dives deep into the issues impacting all of us today. This podcast will change the way you see the world. Check out their first two episodes featuring Evander Holyfield and Tip T.I. Harris. Don't miss Hotboxing with Mike Tyson every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Beyond the darkness.
We're back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. How do I know? Because I do. What are you questioning me for? You tuned in, so obviously you believe in it as well. For God's sake, stop questioning the messenger. Whew, Tim, these people, can you believe it?
Some days, yeah.
You make a claim as being the best in the world and people want to suddenly question you? How dare you for questioning me about me claiming this is the best in paranormal talk radio. It's my favorite show. How about yours, Tim?
Well, yeah, I'm partial to it. Yeah.
Yeah, see? So if we like it and we're saying it's the best, have we ever lied to you people that you're aware of? That's what you have to ask yourself. Life is about having fun. Have more fun, folks. Hercules Invictus, our guest today, as we've been discussing the possibility or probability of the ancient gods being part of this alien culture, an ancient alien culture that's always been amongst us. Now, some people, as I said before the break, Hercules, believe that we have been deposited here and we are in a giant petri dish under the cosmic microscope being watched and studied by our creators. Some believe that they still walk amongst us and that they are here interwoven into the tapestry of our daily lives. I believe that's kind of where you fall in, but what do you exactly think? And I'd love to get more of your take on it.
I believe they're real because my experiences tend to reinforce that view. But again, I'm always open to new possibilities. So I can discover a way of looking at this or experiencing it. Tomorrow it will change, you know, how I view it and so forth. But I'm 61, and in my 61 years, most of which were spent looking at things like this, I've come to the conclusion for now that they are real and that they are among us and that they interact with us quite often. Would you like me to share another personal story?
Oh, no, we'd like to wrap it up at this point. I think we've heard enough from you.
Yes, okay, great.
That's why we have you on the show. We want to hear your stories. Please,
well,
feel free.
Well, thank you. Yep. This was something that happened in the past couple of years and was quite dramatic, and maybe it'll illustrate how this works a little bit better. I was meditating. Now, one of the things I like doing is I like working with dreams, I like meditating. I don't do any drugs, but I like experimenting with consciousness naturally. So I'll try like astral projections and, you know, all sorts of things. You know, I like playing with consciousness and exploring that way. So I was doing a meditation. It was one of my regular meditations. And all of a sudden I started seeing pictures of Zeus's statue in ancient Olympia, which was one of the seven wonders of the world. And unfortunately it doesn't exist anymore, but it existed in antiquity. So I'm floating around, you know, watching this statue with ivory and gold and gems and so forth. And again, these visions tend to get quite vivid, especially if you're between waking and sleeping, either way, hypnagogic or hypnopompic. So I thought I'd fallen partially asleep and I'd wandered into the hypnagogic. And so I was getting like the intense vivid imagery from that, but I was lucid. So that's what I thought was going on. Then the statue started addressing me telepathically, and it identified itself as Zeus. And then it thanked me for doing his work and carrying out his mission. So I didn't know what he meant, so I asked, what do you mean? So he pointed to the fact that the Golden Fleece was his and that I spent a large part of my life recruiting Argonauts and doing little and big things you know, here and there, and he pointed to several other, you know, examples as well. So then he said that he was my spiritual father. And I replied that, you know, basically I haven't really felt him around. So if he's been a spiritual father, he's been kind of like an absent spiritual father. Right. And then
he's a weekend dad, right?
Yeah, that's how I responded. And then he showed me instances where, no, there was some presence there that I just didn't detect who it was, but that he was there. And then I asked him, you know, what did he want of me? And he said, what does any father expect from his children? And humanity are my children. So I'm a dad. So I said, basically, well, what I expect from my children is that they love me as I love them, that they're a part of my life as much as they'd like to be, that they're happy I'm in their life. And I listed a few things that universally dads want. So he responded that that's what he wants as well. And that, you know, I understood that and then told me I had to look at the concept of fatherhood and work through whatever issues I had with that. And growing up Greek during the time I did, there's like lots of daddy issues, you know, that were there that I had to work through, and I guess I missed some. So anyway, when that experience finished, I considered it like a dream. You know, it was some psychological content manifesting itself in this way, and I had some, you know, work to do, and that's okay. I like I said, playing with my mind, so I know techniques where I could, like, explore my past and find things that are still causing me problems and so forth, and then spend the time it takes to work past that. So that's where I put it. The next day, I got a call from a spiritual group in California that I have on my show, and they told me that one of their deities that they work with revealed himself as Zeus, and he had a message for me. So I said, okay, sure. And they told me basically what I had been told during my meditation. And then a friend who is a magician, not pulled rabbit out of the hat magician, but an occultist magician, who was in Chicago, in a telephone conversation, told me that in his workings, Zeus gave him a message for me. And it was the same message that I got in my meditations. And then for weeks, there were synchronicities where Zeus's name would pop up. And Zeus's name does not often pop up in conversations, as you know. So it would pop up, Zeus, you know, wherever I was moving through life, or people I was talking to. And then fatherhood kept coming up in conversations too. So at that point, I had to admit that this was not something in my head, that somehow I might have experienced it as in my head, and I might have preferred to place it there, you know, until I could work with it. But whatever this was, it had spilled out of my head into my waking reality, and that it was trying to draw my attention, and that it succeeded awesomely, because how can you ignore when that happens? So then these communications came both in my own work with myself and through other people. And these two people don't know each other, but they were giving me consistently the same message from, you know, how they perceive Zeus to be. So at that point, I just accepted it and started working on my father issues and started focusing more on what I do normally, which is recruit Argonauts and try to fix social problems in one way or another. And that took on a whole new meaning. So my world and the way I viewed what I was doing and the way I understood what I was doing changed dramatically. So that's another example. But again, just to show you how, like, the invisible interacts with the visible.
Now, I'm curious too, and you guys have, you've put in a lot of stories for all of the different books that Tim Beckley has put out there. And Tim had asked me specifically to have you talk about some of the aspects of sexual contact with aliens or gods. And I was wondering if that's something you'd be willing to get into a little bit.
Sure. I touched upon it before. The gods can and do, according to all accounts we have of them throughout the globe and throughout time, take on the shape of mortals, and they have sex with mortals. And sometimes this, as in human sex, develops into relationships of some sort, and sometimes, just like in human interactions, it doesn't. So in one of the books, I talked about that at great length and gave the example of the heroes, that although some thought was placed into who the gods interbred with, they usually had a reason, like with the Theban Hercules, the Hercules of old, of legend. Zeus had slept with his grandmother as well.
And boy, that Zeus, he gets around, doesn't he?
Or his great-grandmother, yes, was Danai, and Perseus was the result of that union. He's the one with the Gorgon,
okay,
or Medusa. And then a couple of generations later, Zeus slept with Alcmene and produced Hercules. And he produced Hercules for the purpose of helping them defeat the giants, because of some prophecies that were made about how they can defeat one of the onslaughts of the giants against Olympus. So these type of stories showed us that although there was some purpose sometimes in how they selectively bred, and they could selectively breed in the same family, other times it just seemed like, you know, they met somebody on their vacation. That was done most humorously in the Arnold Schwarzenegger Hercules in New York, where Zeus there says he wished he didn't meet his mother while he was on vacation on Earth. And then at the end, you see him all dressed up coming down to Earth for another vacation. So that's what I talked about in that book. And the fact that in the Greek stories, there are no laboratories, there's no cloning, there's none of that. You know, there's just girl fashion selective breeding.
Weird. Weird deals. Now, do you believe that there are wars between these gods and visiting aliens?
The history of religion tells us that there are. I've never had any divine or celestial entity tell me not to like anybody, you know, because of what they believed. But in the literature that survives from antiquity and from the behavior of religious organizations today, I would say that, yes, there are tensions in heaven and that these tensions play themselves out as a reflection here on the earth. The stories, if you take them in isolation, they don't make a lot of sense. But if you look at them through the lens of like a comparative mythology or comparative religion or the occult, like, for instance, who is the God of the Hebrews? Is it Jehovah or Yahweh?
Jehovah, Yahweh, right.
Now, the Greeks know that God as Kronos. Kronos is the one who swallowed his children because he thought that they would take over his heaven. And the way the ancients preserved that knowledge most directly, there's a lot of stuff written about it. If you want to explore the writings of philosophers and historians and other people, you can do that. But more directly, the god that we're talking about was the god of the Sabbath, the god of Saturday or Saturn. And Saturn is Kronos, and that's his holy day. So if you're looking at things mythically and past culture, Kronos is now back. And during one of the very frequent waves of conflict or change that happens on the celestial realms, he's back in control again. And the Olympians or the Elohim or the Archons, you could, again, it's the same class of beings we're talking about in the Mediterranean. They're considered to be lesser, most generously in angel mythology. They're sometimes thought of as the virtues, which are a second tier, like class of angels. But if you look at Elohim, the word Elohim too, Elohim means Lord, and that could apply to a person or it apply to a god or any type of being in between. And the word archon, which a lot of people are saying the evil archons who control us, you know, through mind control and our emotions are food to them. Archon means leader. It means the exact same thing as Elohim. And an archon could be an earthy leader or a non-earthy leader. So, again, it's just a title. It's not a distinct and different type of being. Like an angel, angel means messenger. That's all it means. So if you delivered a message, which you did on your commercials today, you're an angel by the ancient way of understanding what an angel is. Because
did you hear that, Tim? I'm an angel. Angel.
Wow.
Huh. And you broadcast the message given to you for, and you spread it out over the ethers and it reached other people because you were the agency for it. So according to ancient thinking, you're an intermediary being, and what you did made you an angel because you delivered a particular message. So these words meant something different in antiquity, just like the word gentleman and noble or gentle and noble meant different things. Like in the Middle Ages, gentles who were gentles or owners of land, the gentry, and nobles who were aristocracy could slaughter people with impunity and sleep with brides on their wedding nights, and they were still gentle and noble. The words mean different things now. And it's the same thing with the ancient words, too. They take on different meanings, but they don't mean what we give them the meaning for today. They meant something very different to the ancients.
I know we don't have a whole lot of time left together, and I know you've got a lot of different things off the air. I was asking you some of the other points that you'd like to make sure that we get a chance to mention today. So at this point, I'd like to turn that over to you. And, you know, in this research and work, what has been some of the most fascinating finds that you've uncovered?
Some of the most fascinating finds have been the universality of the access to this information, that it's there in ancient writings, it's there in the occult, it's there in the modern theories like with the ancient astronauts, it's there in theosophy and anthroposophy and the UFO revelations given to us by beings from other planets or other systems. It's like John Keel, who was an awesome individual, just like Tim Beckley is. I knew John back in the day. He had compared it to like a broken record that's broadcasting, you know, over and over and over again. And Dionne Fortune, the occultist, she wrote a book called The Cosmic Doctrine, where she became aware that a lot of the things that she had learned through magical lodges were like being broadcast, and you could tune into them through meditation and other things. So this information is there. If something was hostile and did not mean us well, why would it put information there that we can access through just about anything if we choose to, you know, look for who are these beings and what do they want? What's their purpose? You know, what's our purpose? What's our destiny? The information is culturally clothed a little bit differently. Some of the explanations are a little bit different. Some of the understandings are a little bit different. But it all seems to be at its core the same information. And the most exciting thing for me was discovering that and then, you know, following it, the thread anew with that understanding. And it's just been amazing what I'm finding and what other people have found as well.
If people are interested in looking this up and kind of following the narrative themselves, what do you recommend is some of the best literature or historical papers that they can see this? It's not just the words of a guy called Hercules Invictus sharing it, but that they can see and track the legend of all of this.
I think the best way is actually the easiest way. Start reading Greek mythology again, or any mythology, Norse mythology. And instead of looking at it as these are interesting stories that our ancestors told to explain the thunder and lightning and why it rained and earthquakes and things like that, ask yourself, what if this was true and that they were actually reporting something that was happening as it happened? And what if, again, these weren't direct accounts but remembrances, because ancient literature, you know, was oral, it was handed down until it was written, and then, again, there are different interpretations. But start asking yourself that question, and then a good place to go from there is the ancient alien literature, because it looks at these ancient stories by what we understand about ourselves and things today. So its greatest value, I don't believe everything that the ancient alien theory presents, but it helps you force your perspective into a different groove. And it's like, yeah, that does look like a light bulb. Yes, they did have batteries. You know, you start discovering things like that in that literature, and then it informs what you're looking at when you read the myths. And they've had several really good episodes devoted to the myths. From there, there's a lot of esoteric stuff, but if somebody starts there, look at the myths anew. Look at the myths through the ancient astronaut theory. Look at it through the New Age teachings. Same information, but in a totally different way of looking at it and understanding it. And just make your mind more flexible, make your mind more open, be willing to entertain possibilities. That's, the best thing I can leave people with.
Hercules, thank you so much for popping on with us today, giving us an hour of your time and giving us some new insights to consider. I find it fascinating, and it's been great to catch up with you. Keep doing the good work you're doing, and we'll put up links to your website and information on how to find out your work as well.
You too. I had a great time, and I must say, for those who don't know Tim Beckley, he is an awesomely incredible individual, and I'm greatly honored to be part of his writing circle for these books. I grew up on these books, by the way, so I'm really honored to be part of them now.
Yeah, Tim's a great guest, and he's been a good friend of the show for many years. So thank you, Tim Beckley. Thank you to Hercules, and thank you to all of you. We'll be back again next week. And remember, if you're interested in any of the great books, documentaries, or anything you're looking for, either on Darkness Radio, Midnight in the Desert, or on True Crime Tuesday, go check out darknessradio.com. Click on the storefront. You'll see the little link says store. Click on it. Go down and you can click on my Amazon storefront and it'll take you in. We've got the book separated, paranormal in one space, true crime in another, and then other cool paranormal themed gift items in another. So go check all that out at darknessradio.com. We'll be back again Tuesday with more True Crime Tuesday. You've been listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.